All right. So good afternoon, I'm Pierre. And in this presentation, I will do this presentation with my colleague Song Hoon, which is here. We are both postdocs at Virginia Tech. And we are going to talk about Popcorn, which is a set of system software to enable migrations of threads and applications across CPUs of different architectures. So we make the following observation, that the data center is becoming more and more heterogeneous. And when I say heterogeneous, I'm speaking about the architecture implemented by the central processing units that are integrated into the server. So we, of course, we have the classical Intel x86-64 architecture. PowerPC has been around for quite some time now. And there is a big push in the last years for ARM64 servers that are entering the data center. So it turns out that each of these architectures and each of the machines running CPUs from this architecture, each of these has its pros and cons in terms of performance and power consumption profiles where, when running some kind of workloads. And we ask the question, how can we have these machines cooperate toward the completion of some workload? How can we leverage this heterogeneity and this heterogeneous profiles in terms of power consumption and performance in the data center? So we propose the following solution, which is we call it Popcorn. It's a set of system software, so a compiler, a distributed operating system kernel based on Linux, and some user space runtime that allow applications to migrate between CPUs of different architectures. So at a very high level, the way it works is that we take your sources and we run them through our compiler, which is based on LLVM. We generate what we call multi-ISA binaries that are capable of migrating between architectures. And we run these binaries on top of a distributed operating system that is spanning multiple computers in an heterogeneous cluster, in a cluster composed of computers of different architectures. So we are mostly focusing on it's x86-64 and ARM64 as some application case. So the application for this to be able to migrate between architectures, this is done mostly in two main steps. The first step is to be able, how can we transform the architecture-specific state of the application between the representation from one ISA to the other. So this architecture-specific state is composed of the stack and the registers at migration time. And then we need to, as all the traditional migration systems, we need to transfer the rest of the address space. So this is done through some in-kernel distributed shared memory systems that we implemented. Why do we want to do that? So in order to leverage the different power consumption and performance profile of all these machines with all this ISA, if we are able to migrate between these machines, we can actually do a lot of, let's say, smart consolidation and load balancing in the data center. And the literature also shows that some part of some programs is going to show what is called affinity towards some ISA, meaning that a subpart of a program is going to run pretty well on this architecture, let's say x86, and the second part of the program will run better on ARM. So there is some motivation for such kind of migration. So I will follow the following outline. I will first present the support implemented at the compiler level in order to create these multi-ISA binaries that are ready for migration. And then Song Hoon will present the support at the operating system level to actually perform the migration and transfer the address space. And then I will very briefly go through some numbers and present our ongoing and future works. So related to the compiler, this work has been done by Rob Lyerly, which is a PhD student in our research team. So all the credit goes to this guy. So the goal of the compiler is to be able to create what we call multi-ISA binaries that are ready for migration between different architectures. And in that context, we really put the emphasis into asking absolutely zero effort from the developer in order to be able to migrate between these architectures. So what does it mean? It means that we are going to focus on popular and high-performance languages, native languages like C and C++, that are compatible with the POSIX standard. We ask absolutely no hint from the programmer to say, hey, this part of application should run on this ISA, and this part of the application should run on the other ISA, because we want to be as transparent as possible from the programmer or the system administrator standpoint. So our system is built in such a way that some hypothetical heterogeneous scheduler should be able to take scheduling decision and automatically migrate the application between heterogeneous machines. Now, if you want to leverage an heterogeneous computer cluster, there is already some existing approaches. For example, I can compile a set of MPI jobs composing a distributed application, and I can compile each job natively for different ISAs and run, let's say, a subset of the jobs on x86 and a subset of the jobs on ARM. Now, the problem with this is if I have a legacy shared memory application, well, I have to rewrite it using the distributed shared memory model, which is a lot of effort. Some managed runtimes, Java is a good example, allows to abstract the architectural specific characteristics of the ISAs from the programming language. But if my application is not written in Java, well, I have to rewrite it. And in addition to that, the overhead introduced by the virtual machine is quite significant. Finally, emulation allows you to run unmodified binary, but the overhead is, in most of the cases, absolutely not acceptable. So QEMU is a good example of emulator using dynamic binary translation. So in our system, the compiler takes the source code and follows a set of steps, which is compilation, then linking, then we do a little bit of post-processing, and what this tool chain steps output is a set of multi-ISA binaries. So we try to minimize as much as possible the differences, the architectural specific differences in these binaries. So we are going to have one code section per architecture, but we are going to enforce having a common data section, data sections that are really similar between each binary corresponding to each architecture. The compiler is, in addition to that, going to instrument the code and insert migration points at some specific location in the code. And finally, the compiler is going to add some transformation metadata that are going to be needed at runtime when we actually migrate to be able to transform the application architecture-specific state between the ISAs. So as a reminder, this state is the content of the stack and the registers. So now there is some cost when we want to create these multi-ISA binaries, and we try to minimize that as much as possible. This cost can be divided into two main points. One is the cost of changing the binary representation to match what is supported by each ISA. So we make a set of assumptions to minimize this cost for the data. We assume that Little Endian for everyone, so x86 being Little Endian, ARM being bi-endian, we can do that. And we assume equal size for C primitive types. We can make sure that the data section is similar in both architectures. In terms of code, we do not perform any kind of dynamic binary translation at migration time. So we have one code section for each architecture, so there is no cost at runtime. Some cost is also related to moving data. So of course, when we transfer the address space between the machines, there is some cost. But in some situations, there can be also some the need to move data inside one address space from some addresses to another one to satisfy some architecture-specific constraints. This is not the case in our system because we assume that the address space is laid out in a similar fashion in each architecture, meaning what we are doing is that we are aligning each symbol in the address space of each ISA to be at the same address. Now, there are a few corner cases in which we have actually to move a little bit data around and update references, which are pointers to the stacks, but for reason of time, I won't go into the details, but we manage that with a minimal cost on performance. So the compiler toolchain is based on LLVM. We use the gold linker, so we modified and slash or added around 8,000 of lines of code, mostly in Clang, mostly in LLVM, sorry. We have a tool that is generating custom linker script in order to lay out the address space in a similar fashion in each architecture. And we have a set of user space transformation libraries that are statically linked into the application binary to actually perform the migration at runtime. And that's it. So the way one compiles an application with LLVM is that so we have the source code that is fed to the front end. So in that case, that would be Clang, the front end for the C language. And this, the front end is generating what is called the LLVM intermediate representation, and which is passed to the middle end, which performs a set of optimization. And after that, this intermediate representation is passed to the architecture specific backend that is going to generate some architecture specific machine code, and generate object files. After that, object files are linked. We do a little bit of post-processing, and we generate the multi-ISA binaries. So a little bit more details about the code generation. So let's assume I have a vector addition function in C in my source code. So after running through the front and middle hand, I'm going to get this LLVM intermediate representation, which looks like some kind of pseudo-assembly code. And it is ISA agnostic. So the same intermediate representation will be used by the x86 and the ARM backend. So what we do is that we instrument this intermediate representation with migration points that are located at function boundaries. I will come back to this later. And at each migration point, which are potential points for migration, we use a module which is called LLVM stack maps to run some analysis and tell us what is the list of live values that are on the stack or registers, because this is what we are going to need to transform between ISAs. Once we run this to the backend and actually generate the machine code, once the register and stack allocation has actually been performed, we are able to infer the location of each live value for each migration point, for each architecture. So we basically are able to reconstitute the actual layout of the stack at each migration point for each architecture. And this is going to be very helpful when we actually migrate. All right, so once the object files are generated, we generate a custom linker script in order to align each symbol in each section of each binary to be at the same address in both architectures. So we do that by generating a custom linker script and adding a bunch of paddings between symbols to align them. And then we do a little bit of post-processing on the binaries in order to reorganize the LLVM stack map metadata in some custom ELF sections that will be read at runtime. This, so I won't go into the detail, but this has very few impact on performance at runtime. So, as I said, we insert migration points into the code. So we cannot insert these migration points at arbitrary location. We need to insert these migration points at some specific location in the program where there actually exists a mapping between the application state on one ISA to the application state on another ISA. So if I migrate in the middle of a bunch of ARM instructions, I mean, ARM being a RISC architecture, sometimes to do one instruction on x86, it actually takes multiple instructions on ARM, and it's kind of complicated to migrate in the middle of such a set of instructions on ARM. So actually what we do is that we migrate only at function boundaries. So at the beginning and end of each function, we insert these migration points. And they are represented just by function calls to the migration library. So when the thread executes, these function calls actually check a flag that is in a shared memory segment between the kernel and the application. So it basically tells the application if it should migrate or not. So in that case, it should not migrate. So let's assume when the function is executing, the kernel, some kind of heterogeneous scheduler, is setting the flag. And next time we reach a migration point, this flag will be checked. And in that case, we will actually transform the execution state and migrate. So the actual migration procedure is as follows. We transform the stack and the register set at the migration points between the source and target ISA. We are going to rewrite the entire stack frame by frame from the top to the bottom of the stack. And then we pass this state to some operating system service, transfer this state to the target machine, bootstrap the corresponding binary on the target machine, restore the state, and then the process resumes. So most of the address space is going to be transferred on demand using the distributed shared memory protocol that Sangun will talk about in the rest of the presentation. So I'm just going to go briefly on how we transform the stack. So on the source machine, we split what the amount of megabytes that Linux is giving us for the stack, which is 8 megabytes, in two. And in the second half, we are going to rewrite the stack for the target machine. So the first thing we need to know is what is the size of the target stack. So we look at each stack frame, and we look in the LLVM stack metadata, what are the corresponding stack frame on the target architecture, and we are able to infer the size of the target stack. And once we have this size, once again, we go from top to bottom, look at each stack frame, and using LLVM stack metadata, we are able to translate the content of each stack frame and the content of each set of saved registers from one stack frame to the other. Using the metadata, we are also able to rewrite the color return address as well as the color base pointer, and rinse and repeat for each stack frame down to the bottom of the stack. So just one last thing. How fast is a state transformation? It's actually pretty fast. So once again, I don't have time to go into the details, but we run a bunch of measurements on the NPB parallel benchmarks. And transforming the stack is as a maximum of a couple of hundred microseconds. So it's pretty fast. So as a summary concerning the compiler, it generates multi-ISA binaries that are instrumented with migration points. We use the LLVM stack maps to insert metadata in these binaries, recording the set and location of live values at migration points. We provide a common address space by aligning each symbol at the same location in each ISA to enable migration at runtime. And so I give the mic to Sangun to talk about operating system support.
Okay. I'm going to explain the OS support in the Popcorn Linux. The OS is, from the OS perspective, its goal is to provide the actual thread migration at the Linux kernel. So when the library asks the kernel to migrate the thread, it has to do that migration at first. And moreover, because in Popcorn supports the migration by thread granularity, it allows that you can run a process distributed over multiple nodes. And on each multiple node, they can be run on multiple threads on each sub node. So an operating system should provide somehow the consistent memory to the, all these threads running on distributed node. So that is the most important job in the kernel's perspective. So I start to explain how Popcorn migrated the thread first and explain how provided the consistent memory to those distributed threads. So in Popcorn, actually the thread migration is equivalent to perform the context switch across the machine. So at the origin site, it collects all this execution context, like registers and all other information about the memory stuff. So in this case, we collected we peek into the Linux kernel's MM struct to see the overall memory information from there. Also, we had to collect some data from the thread struct for the checking the thread local storage and the status of the floating point unit. And using and grabbing all these execution contacts, we can migrate to the remote, send that this execution data to the remote locations. And at the remote location, Popcorn reinitiated this thread based on this execution context. So we first create a thread and create the MM struct based on this information. And it updated the register values sent from the origin. Actually, this register value is provided by the user space library that is translated to that destination architecture. So we can just put all this value to PTREGS, and we also set the thread struct accordingly. And then we can just return from the kernel space. And this is actually, from kernel's perspective, it's just the same from returning from the system call. RET from system call will try to restore the system status from restoring all data, all register value from the PTREGS, and do that the rest of the stuff. So now the thread can start running on the remote locations. And once the thread is migrated to remote site, during the migration, we don't gather all this memory information. We bring the data on-demand manner as much as possible to load the overhead for the thread migration. So once the thread is migrated to remote location, there is nothing in there. But we need to take care of the memory consistency between the module, we need to take care of the address space and actual data. In address space in Linux kernel is actually the metadata for a range of address spaces. So we need to first take care of this address space at the beginning, and later we should provide the actual data in there. So I'll explain the way how Popcorn processed it in using this slide and using these animations. So at the beginning, when the thread is migrated from x86 to ARM, it sends the old data and it reinitiated the thread at the remote locations. And it will start at these stages. There is nothing in this remote location. So when it tried to resume the execution at a given instruction pointer register from the address, given from the instruction register, then there will be no memory information at remote site at this time. So the CPU will make a fault. And that at this stage, kernel 2 asks to the kernel 1 and bring the VMA information first. So in this case, it is at kernel will know that, that address is for the code for ARM. So it will notify to kernel 2 that you should load the ARM binary, ARM text from the unified ISE single binary. And it will try to resume execution again. But the problem is now we don't have stack either. Stack in this side neither. So, we need to bring that information from the kernel 1 again. So we contact with kernel 1, and I need the information about the VMA corresponding to the stack, and it received the data in there, and initiated that VMA for the stack in all the remote locations. And now we can send the actual data from the origin to remote, and it can be mapped into the address space in there. So once we establish the VMA address space across the multiple machines, now we need to provide actual data to the remote machine. So because of the implementation feasibility, we now designed this protocol as a very centralized way. So when a remote tries to access the page and the page is not on that side, it always asks to its origin locations and asks to give me the actual data from origin. But we do a little bit more optimization for this protocol to scale with respect to the number of threads in here. So when the remote request is for read, we replicate the page put it to the remote locations. And if the request is for write, give the exclusive access to that remote server in there. So I'll explain using a following slide animation as well. So in this case, we have application is now running on three nodes. So one is at origin, and one is on remote one, and one remote two. At remote one, there are three threads are running in there, and there is two threads on each machine, origin and remote two, sorry. And this blue box means indicate the page where which the node has the read and write permission. So in this case, when the remote two tries to access and page one here, it has no data at this time. So now it access contact origin and give request for the page for page one, and origin send the data to there. And in this case, it is downgraded to read permission, and now remote two has the read permission actually at this time. So in this case, remote one might ask three port for this three concurrent thread access. In this case, they also ask to the origin again, and they can bring this page to remote one again. And for handling the write cases, in this case, the remote two require page three for write requests. So it asks to origin, and origin releases its ownership and send the page to remote two and give the write permission to there. And when if remote two requires to write on a shared pages, it contact again. And see, in this case, the page is spread over multiple nodes, so in this case, it revoked the ownership first by sending the invalidization message to all nodes in the rack, and it revoked its ownership and sent back to remote two that, okay, here is your access granted. So now it has the write permission in there. So this is actually a very high-level perspective of memory management in here, so I really welcome to make a discussion further for our DSM implementation. Now I'm going to pass to Pierre again to conclude our talk.
Thanks. Okay. So I'm going to go super fast. So we run a set of evaluation using the NPB benchmark, using an x86 Xeon server and the APM Xgen, which is a first generation ARM servers. And so, long story short, we demonstrated that in some cases we get some nice energy saving when we compare x86 ARM setup to a dual x86 setups. So, yeah, here we have 66% gain in terms of energy and in terms of energy delay product too. Ongoing and future works, we are working on a PowerPC. And we are trying to do the same with what is called unikernels that are small, very small guests running on top of an hypervisor, because we think this would be very useful in a virtualized setup too. To conclude, there is some heterogeneity that can be leveraged in the data center. We propose a set of system software to be able to migrate application between CPUs of different architecture. This set of software is composed of a compiler, a distributed operating system, and implementing in particular some distributed shared memory system to maintain the consistency of the address space. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Questions? Just out of curiosity, as I saw, your solution assumes clear boundary between data and code. Is it possible? Maybe it doesn't happen very often in real applications. Is it possible that your solution will work when data is mixed with code or code is self-modifying.
Could you rephrase, please?
Is it possible that is your solution work? Does your solution work when data is mixed with code, or code is self-modifying? Probably it doesn't happen in real application. It is.
So okay. So data with mixed with code, I would say.
Yes, I expected that. And
yeah, I mean, so I mean, if the code is self-modifying and you want to migrate in the middle of a self-modification, that's very probably it will be extremely extremely difficult.
Yes.
If you generate code inside your program, you don't have all metadata which is
saying
available compile time to
program.
Yeah.
So it won't be
migratable. Yes, thanks. Just out of curiosity. Thanks a lot.
Anybody else? So thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Now we'll have a short break till 3:45.